You mentioned this kind of fracturing of ideas and then, putting it back together. And that is completely, that is a process, and it's imperfect and it's messy, but it can completely get to the good stuff.
Hey, I'm thrilled to welcome Alyssa Garnick to the podcast. She's founder of the GNPR and has spent the last 25 years helping the biggest global brands position themselves, launch products with creative ideas, and grow press coverage. We have a great conversation ahead. I hope you'll enjoy it. And also, just one quick disruption alert. You may have seen on my LinkedIn article, but I believe now the time is for VR and for VR at scale with the low-priced headsets offered by Facebook's Oculus division. We're seeing a wide-ranging opportunity for marketers, also in the areas of training, education, as well as old-fashioned gaming. So hope you'll check that out as well. And now on to the podcast. All right, Alyssa, welcome to the podcast. How are you
Hi,
today?
Paul. Oh, I'm great. And I'm so happy to talk to you.
Yeah, excellent. Well, you've been on my list of guests for a long time, and I'm glad we finally put this together, especially in 2021.
Right. Off to a good start.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So I was going to ask you, I think all of us were just waiting to get 2020 behind us, right?
And yeah.
I'm just curious, how are you feeling about 2021 so far?
Well, I'm very optimistic. I always am. I thought that 2020, from a marketing perspective, turned out to be a little bit better than expected. So going into 2021, I'm even more enthused. I've also seen a lot of business happening, a lot of new business picking up, brands doing interesting things. So I'm extremely optimistic.
Ah, that's great to hear. Yeah, I am too. It's interesting. It's almost like there's a tale of two worlds that are going on, right? Where there is legitimate, the pandemic just continues to rage, and we've had so many people that are struggling. And on the other side, it seems like businesses are kind of ready to get back to it again, and want to get almost make up for lost time. So yeah, it's interesting, sort of the two worlds that we're seeing around here.
It's totally surreal. And I think about that too. I think about it, when things are going well, when we sit in our home offices and we're working, that's not the experience of everybody in the world. And it's not the experience of everybody in the US. So yeah. We try to, give what we can give back, and also reflect that sometimes in ideas, or reflect it and push companies and corporations to do more. Yeah. Because that's what we can influence.
That's a great point. That's a great point. Well, I want to pick this part up again in a second, but just to ground everybody, I gave a little bit of your background in my intro, but can you share a little bit about your background and then what you're doing now?
Oh, sure. So my background, or at least the majority of my career so far, has been spent at large agencies working with large brands and helping them with their consumer PR, launching products, reaching specific audiences, having a very kind of new message that needs to get out to multiple constituents. So that has been the majority of my career and my work so far. And, I was thinking about this and thinking about how I've spent my time working and how I even got into PR. And how I got into PR was I had an internship at Cape Cod Potato Chips in the 90s.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I was the marketing intern, not the PR intern, the marketing intern. And then I was the marketing coordinator. And then I was the marketing manager. But what I learned was kind of all the different pieces of marketing, even beyond what I had learned in school and in textbooks, with the four P's and all of that. So it really gave me an education, and I ended up really sparking to the PR side of what we were doing. And so then I went into PR from there. I really targeted PR agencies after that.
That's neat. Yeah. It's interesting how people get into this business, right? Because some people actually, you know, have degrees in either journalism or in communications, et cetera. But I think it's a minority compared to the people that actually get into business. So I'm always intrigued by people's sort of origin stories like that.
Right.
That's interesting.
I was an English major, but I had no idea what I wanted to do. And the thing that really got me is when I was working at Cape Cod Potato Chips after college, we did a PR campaign for the finale of Seinfeld with an agency at the time that was Jericho. And they were very creative and they were in New York. And this was my first exposure to anything creative in PR. And the campaign was called Thanks for Nothing. And it was to thank, you know, Seinfeld for being a show about nothing.
Nothing, yeah.
And if you sent us a postcard, Cape Cod Potato Chips would send you potato chips back. And we got 50,000 postcards. And it was at that moment that I thought, oh my gosh, look at what's happening here. People are literally writing to us to get samples. And it was all from a press release. So it kind of made me realize that there's something out there that's not always tangible, but very powerful. And that is what made me kind of spark to PR.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, well, I had a similar experience in the sense that I too was an English major. Started off in sciences and then decided to make the shift and had no idea what I was going to do. Some friends were actually studying journalism at another university, and they invited me to come to listen to a speaker at one of the PRSA meetings in Los Angeles at the time. And I heard this very compelling speaker, John Margaritis, who's a big legend in our industry, and was so moved by him and his speech that basically I just went on a tear and sort of became a stalker of that agency until they finally hired me. And it got me thinking, it's kind of like, it's interesting, like I just was that lucky that day to hear him and be inspired, you know, because who knows where things would have gone otherwise. So it's interesting.
And Paul, you are the best stalker. I feel like you taught me how to stalk appropriately, and I just thank you for it.
Yeah, and let's be clear, that's on the new business front, not any actual stalking of stalking fronts.
That is on the new business relationship.
There you go. There you go. Well, now, speaking of new business, I've watched a few segments with the CEO of Square, the payments company, and he argued during the whole period since March that the pandemic is the perfect time to start a new business, because anytime you start a new business, it is chaos. And what better time to start something that's chaotic, but in global chaos? So you are one of those people who started your own new business during this period. So can you talk about kind of what led you to do that? Like, what was your thinking? And then what your experience has been so far?
Totally. First of all, I completely agree. It's a wonderful time to start a business. And I think it even goes beyond the reason that was suggested. It is a great time, not just because it's chaotic and the world is chaotic anyway, and it's kind of an excuse to try something crazy, but it helps you bulletproof your business, because you're already right now setting it up virtually. You're already right now setting it up with technology and meeting people and expanding your network. And those are things that have become very important to do now and easier to do now. So I think it's a great time to start a business for those reasons as well. I decided to do it for a few reasons. I had been thinking about it for a while, but one thing that always bothered me is I didn't know what my offering was going to be. I didn't know what I was going to be able to say to people that I credibly do and I do well. I never had been able to come up with it. And I didn't want to just launch with, you know, Alyssa Garnick PR, like I do PR. It needed to be better than that. And I thought about it for a long time. And then during the summer, I definitely had more time to think about it. I was home more. And I kind of came up with, what is my positioning in the marketplace? And what do I feel like I can really do well? Because I want happy customers. And I also want to do the work that I like to do at this point in my life. So that is really what motivated me, you know, among other things. And then I started, and it's been exhilarating and challenging, but so far so good.
Oh, that's great. Well, congratulations, first of all. Yeah, it's a big step, and I think you're right. I think what does, excuse me, hold a number of people up is the idea of translating their, you know, their corporate job, if you will, into a consultancy or another environment, right? And being able to see that the value exchange will be there and all of the rest. So it is interesting sometimes that that we don't always see the one-to-one, like what would our offer be and all of the rest. But once you start to really think it through, it's really there, right? It's just a question of focus and articulation and following, it sounds like following what you want to do most of the things that you know how to do well.
Right. And then I think you can be a better magnet for it. You know what you do it well. So when people come to you for it, you're extremely confident and enthusiastic, and you can kind of capture those opportunities. And you know, the other thing I would tell people if they're thinking about starting a business now is, I went through this process where I didn't want to just start cold turkey with nothing. I wanted to start with a little bit of something. So I would kind of liken it to create your own safety net, even if it's really flimsy. Make yourself feel like you have a safety net. And for me, what that was launching with one, two, or three clients. I kind of gave myself a goal, launch with a client. Two, you know, get the website done and your positioning done before you launch. Three, get staff lined up so you can scale quickly if you're lucky enough to need to scale quickly. And four, set up your back end. So that when I started on day one, I had already actually worked for 3 months on getting my act together in those four departments. And it felt really good and a little bit more stable the first day that I started.
Yeah, that's interesting. So it's not like trying to start and then just create everything as you go, but having done that legwork to give you a bit more of a foundation. Sounds like it was critical.
Right. That's what I did. And it helped me. It helped me take the leap.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, this is great, Alyssa. Well, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be right back with Alyssa Garnick. Hey, if you're enjoying this episode or the series, we invite you to like, share, and or review the podcast. That would mean a lot. Thanks. All right. And we're back with Alyssa Garnick. Okay, I want to continue on the conversation about starting the agency. And I'm just curious, just a couple questions. You know, what is most exciting for you now about having your own agency? And then also, what are some of the challenges you're facing?
So definitely the thing that is most exciting for me is getting referrals from friends and former colleagues and former clients. And that has happened at a higher volume than I predicted right now at the beginning. Wow. So that's been really, really exciting. I would say the other thing is related to kind of doing what you love, doing what you know. When I am now pitching a piece of business or speaking with a prospective client and it's in my zone, it's exactly what I do, I'm so enthusiastic. I am so, you know, fired up, and I get those clients. So I think it's about focus, and it's been the craziest thing. I feel like the more focused I am, the better I'm doing. And so that has been something really rewarding.
Neat.
Yeah. Huh, yeah. Oh, the great challenges.
Yeah,
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah. There are a few, definitely some major challenges. So I have challenges right now of scale, figuring out how do I scale. I've got a lot of incoming opportunities at this moment, and I've got staff lined up, but I can already see I need to line up staff for February and I need to line up staff for March. Now, I don't know what my business is going to be in July, so I need to make some big decisions, strategic decisions about hiring and partnering. So one challenge is definitely that of scale. and getting it right. And I'm not sure anybody gets it right at every time. So I think there will be some pain points. I think there will be some investment that needs to be made. So that's definitely a challenge that's kind of always on. Probably my biggest challenge.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, having capacity, right, is the key. So you're able to, you know, take on new business, service it right, and then continue to grow. Sort of strategic bets at some point.
And it's got to be capacity with quality. It has to be both, because, you know, I've always had kind of high quality top of mind with my work, but I've never felt it more down to my core as I do now, because
yes,
my name is on it.
That's right.
It's my name, and then it's my name. So I feel like the capacity and quality working hand in hand is a challenge, but it absolutely has to be met.
Yeah. 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 Because if you don't have that, I mean, at the end of the day, what do you have? Right.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, so let's pivot a little bit. I want to go back to kind of where we started in terms of how you got into the field. And I wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, what advice you have for people who might be considering this field broadly, right? Communications, PR, marketing, et cetera, mm-hmm. As maybe early in their career. So somebody who's, you know, relatively new out of school. And then as a follow-up to that, you know, what kind of advice do you have for people who are maybe mid-career? What should they be thinking about?
Okay. So some of my advice for people that are early in their career. So this is something I love. I love talking to students who have just graduated. And I actually got an email today to speak with somebody who just graduated and is looking for an internship. So I love this part of what we're doing now and kind of our, you know, more mature phases in professionalism. But I always have advice that spans from the PR specifics to the general professional. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. On the PR specifics, if you're interested in the world of PR, I always tell them, you need to understand the news. We are in a business that is intrinsically linked to the news. So don't think for a second that you're doing this job just knowing social media or just knowing creativity or just knowing, you know, celebrities or pop culture. You need to understand the news too, and hard news and how it works and local TV. So I always remind them to watch the news, read the news, understand the different beats. This will come in handy when you have to come up with ideas, because they need to land somewhere in the work that we do. And it will also, it will be an education at the same time. So I really remind people that we are linked with the news business. So that's one. The other is kind of in the general professional department, newcomers into careers. I just remind them of the power of the follow-up. Absolutely. Okay. Follow-up. Don't think that everybody's got it in front of them. Don't think that somebody's going to see it, you know, when they need to see it. Don't think that they haven't lost track of your email. Just follow up. This goes back to being maybe a healthy stalker.
Right.
But you'll capture an opportunity or two that you wouldn't have otherwise if you follow up. And I always tell everybody, and this is kind of a bridge in between the new people and the mid-level, share your ideas, speak up and share your ideas. And that will go to your personality and your, you know, kind of spirit working with people and demonstrating passion and ability. But it will also help you be a strong contributing member. And I believe good ideas, good thoughts come from every person at every time in their career. So I really encourage people to share their ideas and also have ideas, you know, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. For the love of God, read something, take a note, think of something, capture, a spokesperson that you saw that you thought was amazing and write it in a notebook. I keep a notebook of ideas and they're not really organized. They're just there, but at least I write them. And sometimes when I'm having a brainstorm, or sometimes, you know, months later, when I want to kind of think back to, oh gosh, what did I see? That was so amazing. It was such a cool event. What was that? Or such a cool company, or an interesting tagline. And I look back, I flip through the notebook, and it's like, oh my God, this. And then it brings me to a new level on another thought and another idea. So keep a book of ideas, and then so have them, find them, get inspiration from all around, keep little, you know, post-its for yourself in one place, and then I promise you they will come in handy.
That is great advice, Alyssa. And this is why we're kindred spirits, right? Because I think for myself, you know, I read a lot, right? Read a lot of different news outlets and things like that. And sometimes I'll intentionally read stories that I have no interest in at all, right? And I'll just be gravitated to it, whether it's some kind of new technology that's B2B or whatever it might be. And then sure enough, later, a week or two, someone will bring up that topic and I'll say, oh, I just read an article about this. You know, here's an idea. Yeah. Also, I'm sure I'm quite annoying in my org, because basically I have a rep where I have to bring a lot of ideas, right? Like if I don't speak up in a meeting, there's a problem. So, right. I enjoy it. I mean, just naturally, I tend to have a lot of ideas. So I'm going to add one more to your list, and it's reflect, right? Reflection. Mm-hmm. As you know, I'm doing this Stanford leadership course this year, and it's been really powerful. And one of the assignments that we're in today or right now is 30 days of journaling, right? Mm-hmm. And it's from a personal standpoint, like what are you seeing in your personal life, but then also importantly in your professional life. And basically right. At the end of every day, you journal about some key things that happened that day and what was your reflection on it. And I've gotten so many insights just from that simple process, not a long journal, nothing like that, but just that simple process of reflecting. Where did something go well today? Where did maybe I not listen as much, or where did I, you know, where was I to whatever? And that tends to really be, it's really been insightful for me. But I really liked your idea, your concept about speak up too. I agree. I think this is the conversation I have with my team a lot, is like, we want to hear your ideas. You know, this is, the ideas are coming from everywhere, and they're only going to be better if they're from all of us, not just a handful.
Bring it, yeah. Bring it on.
Yeah,
right.
Love it. All right, I'm going to pivot again and come back to sort of the 2021 kind of outlook. And, you know, from your perspective, what are some of the things that chief marketing officers, chief communicators need to be keeping in mind or just thinking about in generally in 2021?
Okay, so I've thought about this, and I think about it for my clients as well, CEOs, CMOs, chief comms officers as well. And I think there are a few things going on this year that are unique, obviously, and then a few things going on that are, you know, an extension of 2020. So we can learn a little bit from 2020, and I think just take a step forward from there too. So I looked up a study. It's by Krant. I don't know if you know Krant. They're very cool. They use AI, they basically do data-focused transformation.
Okay.
So they have a cool study, and I actually talked to them this week, and they literally surveyed the Forbes top 50 most influential CMOs and their social channels and their messaging of last year, and they surveyed it for engagement and what kind of rose to the top. And the five most important territories were leading together, creativity, inclusion and diversity, marketing, and COVID. And it was in that order. That means that leading together was at the top, and COVID in 2020 was at the bottom. So I have a few takeaways from that.
Yeah.
And one of my takeaways is, first of all, that CMOs, CCOs, and CEOs, they actually can make a difference in the dialogue and in the culture. I believe this. They're getting bigger and bigger followings. I know that, you know, they've all been working on it for years because we've been doing some of that work, but they can make a difference in the culture and in the scene. And the fact that COVID was last on that list of the most important territories really tells me that there is an opportunity and a permission for companies and professionals to operate with humor, with sarcasm, with good old-fashioned, you know, marketing that we should not be shying away from. Of course, we need to up our cause. Of course, we need to up our purpose. Of course, we need to have empathy and diversity in not just our messaging, but in our actions. But it really shows me that, you know, people aren't just craving COVID news. They're craving the regular stuff that they were always used to. Yeah. Creativity is also at the top of that list. So I think people want to be inspired. And they are not just being inspired by, you know, helplessness. It's hope and it's humor. And I think those kind of tropes in, 2021 will continue to be, viable and engaging.
That's a really interesting point. Yeah, because we're all kind of anxious to get back to sort of, you know, the way things were in a way, right? Like what our normal lives were.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we're going to, as we reemerge, you know, post-vaccine, have some of those things and also keep some of the things that we've experienced during quarantine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I heard on one of your podcasts, you talking about, you know, virtual versus live events. I'm planning now a massive hybrid event for 2021, mm-hmm. kind of acknowledging some people will go in person, some people won't.
Mm-hmm,
So what does that look like, where a speaker needs to speak in, you know, to technology and also to a crowd, and where there can be registrants that are sitting in their home offices and logging on, and people that are there with lanyards and VIP tags. So, what is that going to look like? So I think this hybrid world will stay with us for a while, and certainly online events aren't going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah. And I mean, the wonderful thing, like we always do an annual meeting for our organization where we historically would bring in people from each of our clinics to a central location. And this year we had to cancel last year's, and this year we are doing it entirely virtually. And we'll miss a lot by not being able to see one another. But at the same time, we weren't able to invite all the staff before. So now we'll be able to have everyone participate. So so I do think the exciting thing about like a hybrid model like you're talking about is you can reach just so many more people. So many more people can participate, you know, than sort of an in-person only event. So I think that could be really exciting.
Right. Can I share a cool story about somebody on my team that had, you know, a great idea?
Sure.
Okay, so this is about events, and it also goes to our advice for young professionals. So we were planning a massive opening, and it's the Krispy Kreme new flagship in Times Square, which is fantastic and a complete feat and a total success, and it opened in September. And we were on the planning end and doing the strategy and the PR planning, January, February, March, April, you know, all the way through, and changing it, you know, five times because of coronavirus. So I was on the strategy planning end, and I wrote a plan that included bringing editors and reporters and camera crews, of course, into the new space because it's magnificent and we're making the donuts and they're hot and they're fresh. And it's like everybody's been cooped up in their homes and everybody's going to want to go and take a personal tour of this amazing space.
Sure.
Okay. I wrote the plan, was pretty confident. Somebody on my team said, Alyssa, I really think even in September, people, editors are going to be working from home and they might want an option to log in to a virtual event. I was like, you got to be kidding me, right? Isn't everybody going to want to go to this thing? And they said, well, I think consumers will go, But I think it's possible that editors will want to just get a virtual tour and they will still write about it. So we kind of just, you know, recast the plan slightly and suggested a hybrid event, which was we invited editors in for an editor day that's scheduled, you know, on in time increments. And then we had a big virtual tour that people could select to attend that was professionally produced, and it was like amazing. And if you would ask me to put money on where the people would choose to go and where it would fall, I would have put, you know, 50-50 or 80-20 in person.
Sure.
And in September, the editors chose 80% went for the virtual tour and 20% went for the in-person tour. And it got an enormous amount of press. It didn't at all hinder the results. And people got to experience the shop, you know, give it praise for opening, talk about the donuts. You know, we delivered donuts to them during the virtual tour, which was a whole orchestration in and of itself. But that's where it fell. 80% of the editors did a virtual tour, and this was September.
Interesting.
Yeah, and with such an amazing, you know, experiential offering. So I think that's going to continue, and I don't think it's going to hurt the results.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, what else, Alyssa? Do you have one or two others you think that CMO should be keeping in mind this year?
Yes. I would like to challenge CMOs to not just use insights for ideas. Now, I know that this will be unconventional and upsetting for some, but I would like to challenge brands and CMOs to use different ways in, because I believe we can still get to great ideas in different ways. So, for example, there's a very traditional, you know, ways set up. You know, certainly we worked on that with P&G, where it's insights led, insights driven. There's an insight, and then there's an expression of a side of that insight for the marketing. I think sometimes, Paul, that works better for advertising than it does in PR. I'm not saying you don't check your PR programs against insights. I'm not saying you don't check it to make sure it's relevant to audiences and it's kind of, you know, right-sized and right messaged for an audience. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, if it comes to an assignment where you have to think about a big campaign, try different ways of coming up with those campaign ideas. And maybe it's not all insights as the jumping off point. You could have a jumping off point that is more tactical. You could have a jumping off point that is more cultural. You could have a jumping off point that's more micro, that is kind of a micro insight that leads you to a big idea. I have seen a lot of success brainstorming different ways and coming up with different ideas. So it's just a challenge, and it's just an extra opportunity to maybe break through in a different way.
Yeah, it's a great point. And also, I mean, that actually does support the concept that ideas can come from anywhere, right? And yeah. And also connecting the dots, like it doesn't always have to be a one-to-one, right? And so there are other elements that can inspire. And then when suddenly you connect these two seemingly unlike things, actually some magic does happen. There's a management philosophy called synecdoche, which does this type of work where they take all of a number of things that are sort of on the surface not connected, and then bring them together to create either new ideas, new strategies, yes, things like that. So I've definitely seen that.
Yes.
Seen that worked work well.
Totally. Yep.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay. Well, I think we're getting to the end of our time, Alyssa, but I guess, I've enjoyed our conversation a lot, and I really appreciate your insights here. Is there anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I guess it's just a little note about creativity. You know, we were talking about different ways in for CMOs and others. But, you know, you mentioned this kind of fracturing of ideas and then, you know, putting it back together. And that is completely, that is a process, and it's imperfect and it's messy, but it can completely get to the good stuff. And I think creativity is like, it's like a puzzle, and it's almost like some of the pieces aren't even tangible. Some of the pieces are colorful. Some of them have their shapes. Some of them you need to shapeshift, and you put them together, and you don't, it's like a puzzle that you're building, and you don't even know what it's going to look like when it's done. You're not going for a certain goal other than, you know, having a hook that is going to drive people to your brand. And if even if you don't know what that is, when you start, you can definitely get there by putting different pieces together. And I've seen that process kind of, you deconstruct ideas, you deconstruct brands, you deconstruct what's going on in the culture. And then you look at all those pieces and you say, okay, for the opportunity we have in front of us, how am I putting that back together? And what's a fresh thing to call it? What's a hook? How do we name and frame it, as you would always say? But I think that is awesome. I think so. Just kind of a note about creativity. Sometimes the process gets broken before it gets brilliant. And I think that's okay. And just go with it. And I love doing that work, you know, with my teams and with clients.
Oh, that's awesome, Alyssa. Yeah, I love that quote. Sometimes things need to be broken before they become perfect. Yeah, yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, so I agree with you. I think you have to kind of wade through that creative uncertainty. It's almost like those stages of a new business pitch, and there's a moment where you're kind of completely panicked because nothing looks like it's gonna come together, and then you find the path forward. So, well said, well said. Right. All right, well, it's been great talking to you today. I really appreciate being on the show, and keep me posted on how things are going at the agency, and would definitely look forward to having you come back on at some point in the future.
I would love to. And Paul, I love talking to you as a friend, as a fellow colleague and professional. And thank you for everything you're doing to keep information alive and to share what you learn. I know you're really good at doing that.
Well, it's nice of you to say. Well, thank you. Yeah. All right. Well, that's about all the time we have for today. And we'll see you guys again on a future podcast.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean? It's the public show. We gotta stop talking. We podcast.